well, welcome to the first episode of Gospel Life, where the goal each and every week is to encourage you and persuade you and equip you to do the unthinkable, to aim at the truly radical, and get this, embrace the completely rational. That is, to live gospel-centered lives. That's right, to have our lives be at the center and all the way out to the very edges, gospel lives. Let's face it, this makes complete sense. Why? Well, it's simple. If the good news of Jesus Christ, that is, the gospel, is the main thing in life and reality, and it most certainly is, then our aim must be to press into how to keep that most main thing the main thing in each and everything. I mean, what a tragedy it would be to center your life on secondary things, to keep missing the main thing in favor of lesser things. Or, you know, as Jesus asked so provocatively to the crowds who had gathered around him, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and yet lose his soul? What will a man give in exchange for his soul? And so welcome to Gospel Life, where our unrelenting focus each week will be this, keeping the main thing, the main thing. My name is Mark Fodale, and it'll be my privilege each episode of this podcast to grab a few minutes of your time so that we can all grow in gospel life. Now, by God's grace, I've had countless opportunities over many, many years to keep working this all out. And after 41 years in full-time campus ministry and 17 years in pastoral ministry, I can humbly and hopefully admit I am still very much under construction. No finished product here, that's for sure. We are going to learn and grow together. Now, let me use this first episode to frame our discussion for the weeks and months ahead. Listen, I know you probably already know this, but the gospel of Jesus is much more than a ticket to heaven. Oh, it most certainly is. And it is much more than some extra inspiration along life's journey. Oh, it is so much more. And catch this, it is much more than a code of moral ethics to live by. Now, to be clear, the gospel will eventually bring us to heaven. And it is a source of strength as we make our way through life. And it does contain a set of unflinching commands for us to live by. But, and here's the first big but of this podcast, it is far deeper and far-reaching than any or all of those things. You see, the gospel, well, the gospel is a new set of lenses through which we see everything in life and which reinterprets everything about life and therefore applies to everything of life. It's like when I got glasses for the very first time at the tender age of 7. I can still vividly recall the moment I put them on. I looked around and I suddenly realized the world I had been seeing for 7 years, well, it had been real, but it was all blurry. But my new glasses, let me tell you, they put everything into focus. I could see branches on trees. In fact, I could actually see individual leaves on those branches. And let me tell you, I was thrilled. A whole new world had been opened up to me. Friends, it's the same when the good news of Jesus Christ invades our lives. The blurriness of our former sight begins to be corrected. Things that are unnoticed or overlooked or even disregarded slowly but surely come into focus. I mean, it really is a whole new world. In fact, the Apostle Paul summarized the effect of the gospel this way. In 1 Corinthians 10:31, he said, "So now, whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God." So whether you are a new Christian or a seasoned veteran, whether you're a student on campus or at work in the marketplace, whether your mission field is at home with young children in the classroom among peers or in the office with colleagues, I want us all to link arms and minds to think through how the gospel transforms and informs every single part of life, from the broad and expansive all the way down to the nitty and the gritty. That's right. My goal in gospel life is to be biblically invasive and unapologetically intrusive. Okay, enough with the intro. Let's get to it. Let's press into Gospel Life. So over the past few months, I've been preaching through the Apostle Paul's New Testament letter to the church at Philippi. A number of weeks ago, I was particularly pressed and captured by Paul's words in chapter 1. Let me just set them up for you before I read them to you. So just for a moment, imagine that you're among the first recipients of this letter from Paul, your father in the faith and the founder of your church. You and the church had heard many months ago that he was imprisoned in Rome, some 800 miles away, and was awaiting an almost certain sentence of death. And in response, you sent one of your elders, Epaphroditus, to visit him to bring Paul some much-needed encouragement and supplies. Well, it's now many months later, and Epaphroditus has returned with, you guessed it, a letter from Paul. And so the word spread, and the church gathered to hear this long-awaited letter read aloud. And everyone, including you, had so many questions. How is Paul doing in prison? What was it like to be in a Roman cell? Would he be released? Was he suffering? And as the pastor read the letter, it began as expected with a warm greeting and expressions of affection. But then the pastor began to read the portion you and everyone else have been eagerly anticipating. No one expected to hear these words. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. Now the latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. But what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed. In that I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice. Wait a minute, Paul. Wait just a minute. That's it? Wait, no update on your health? No details about prison life? No talking through your legal options? No expressions of concern about you possibly being executed? No hint of complaint or regret or self-pity? Listen, friends, if I were writing a letter from prison, I would include all of those details. Heck, if I get stuck in a traffic jam, I make sure everyone knows just how hard it was on me. And so, seriously, Paul, are you saying that behind your bruised and beaten body and behind those chained and scarred hands and even while confined in that dank prison cell, you have a smile on your face? And Paul would look at you and he would look at me and he would answer with unabashed calm, oh yeah. And you know why? Because the gospel is advancing, because Christ is being proclaimed, because the main thing is moving forward, and in that I rejoice. And, you know, in case you missed it, I will rejoice. See, friends, the gospel was the most important thing to Paul, and he was happy to report to the church at Philippi that his imprisonment for the gospel had served the cause of the gospel by furthering the advance of the gospel. The main thing was the main thing. Paul's comfort, not the main thing. Paul's condition, not the main thing. Paul's experience, not the main thing. Paul's prospect for release, not the main thing. Remember how he ended that portion of the letter? Even when faced with those who are trying to afflict him while he was suffering in prison, he wrote, what then? Or we might say, so what? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed. In that I rejoice. Yes, and I will rejoice. D.A. Carson, a gifted Bible teacher, author, and one of the founders of the Gospel Coalition, wrote this in an article titled, Put the Gospel First. Paul's example is impressive, and it is clear. Put the advance of the gospel at the center of your aspirations. Our own comfort, our bruised feelings, our reputation, the misunderstanding of our motives, all of these are insignificant in comparison with the advance and splendor of the gospel. What are your aspirations? To make money, to get married, to travel, to see your grandchildren grow up, to find a new job, to get straight A's, to graduate and get a well-paying job, to retire early? Now, none of these is inadmissible. None is to be despised. They're part of the normal cycles of life. Then he ends by saying this. Question is not whether any of these is legitimate, but whether they have become so devouring that the Christian's central aspiration is squeezed to the periphery and choked out of existence entirely. Oh, man. Thank you, Dr. Carson. What a needed warning that legitimate but lesser things could devour the main and most essential thing. And I love how we frame the answer. When he wrote, all of these secondary things are insignificant in comparison with the advance and splendor of the gospel. Now, I want to be clear. That's the challenge and that's the call that you and I will take up each week on Gospel Life, to keep the gospel at the center of our aspirations and motivations and inclinations, to resist the pressure of culture and our own indwelling sin, to squeeze it to the periphery or even choke it out of existence entirely. So that's where we're going. And I want to invite you to join me for the journey. But let me warn you, you will not emerge unscathed or unchanged, unless, of course, you have a hardened heart. You see, the gospel will transform you. Make no mistake about it. It is that powerful and it is that unrelenting. Friends, keeping the main thing is dangerous business. Gospel will not leave you alone. It will change you until one day, when you see Jesus, you'll actually look just like him. Okay, one last quote. C.S. Lewis, a great Christian writer and thinker of a past generation, wrote in his classic work, Mere Christianity, imagine yourself as a living house. God comes in to rebuild that house. Now, at first, perhaps you can understand what he is doing. He's getting the drains right and stopping the leaks in the roof and so on. You knew that those jobs needed doing, and so you're not surprised. But presently, he starts knocking the house about in a way that hurts abominably and doesn't seem to make any sense. What on earth is he up to? The explanation is that he is building quite a different house from the one you thought of. He's throwing out a new wing here and putting on an extra floor there and running up towers and making courtyards. You see, you thought you were being made into a decent little cottage. But he's building a palace. He intends to come and live it in himself. Oh, friends, what a vision. And so until next week, let's walk through life with those new gospel lenses in place and endeavor by the grace of God to keep the main thing, all to the glory of God.